So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game! It's all about the game, and how you play it, all about control, and if you can take it, all about your debt, and if you can play it, it's all about pain,
and who's gonna make it?
I am the game, you don't wanna play me,
I am control,
no way you can shake me,
I am heavy debt,
no way you can pay me,
I am the pain,
and I know you can't take me,
look over your shoulder, ready to run, like a cleaver's face from a smoking gun,
I am the game,
and I the move on out, you can die like a fool.
Try to figure out what my mood's gonna be.
Come on over, circle, why don't you ask me?
Don't you forget there's a price you can pay.
Cause I am the game and I want to play.
Real quick, let's just get this out of the way early. I keep getting accused of not giving out the call-in numbers as much as I should, and that's probably right. I'm pretty bad about that, so let's just get right to it. 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. Those are the call-in numbers for tonight and every night right here at the MVM Radio Network. I'll tell you, we got a lot going on, as usual. First things first, though, we have to welcome Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
All right, Mr. Springsteen.
Did you have a good holiday?
I had a good holiday. Worked my ass off. I got to do my first annual mowing, and I did that. And, of course, everybody that saw me afterwards, they said, looked at me and said, "Damn, you look like you got beat up." Because the allergies are so bad on that first hay cutting. It's just, oh. I mean, I thought about posting a picture on Facebook, but if it did, I just not ready for the barrage of comments like, "Yeah, who kicked your ass?" I look like I've been beat down by about four people. It was horrible, and it felt worse. So,
It's really amazing. It's really amazing because when I cut my grass here at the house, I mean, I live in a city. But when I cut my grass here at the house, man, I tell you what, you know, I get those allergies too. I get all swollen and puffy, can't breathe, can't talk, you know, it's all that crap going on for about two or three days.
Mowing grass doesn't get me, but this is, you know, when fescue gets about 3 feet tall, it's hay. I mean, I'm telling you, I'll sneeze mowing some grass every once in a while, but this is like Mother Nature's chemical warfare for me. I mean, I look like somebody tear gassed me.
Well, I tell you, I can totally believe it, man. And it's really amazing too, because none of this stuff used to bother me at all, you know. But sometime over the last 4 or 5 years is when I started really developing this kind of crap. And I'm sure it's probably about the same with you as young men. We didn't have these problems, did we?
Actually, when I was younger, I had it much worse. I mean, I was
oh,
like
so you've been a wimp your whole life then.
Oh, it was horrible. It was horrible. I couldn't sleep at night. And then I got, and actually my allergies are much better than they were, but except for this. When this happens, it's over. I am a done. I mean, when I was younger, gosh, 20 years ago, almost 30 years ago, I was riding a motorcycle one time and just riding it. And the ragweed, literally, my eyes almost fell shut in like 5 minutes when I hit apparently I ran through a bunch and I almost wrecked the motorcycle. I barely got back.
Wow.
It was much worse. But this, I'm pretty much limited to it. I look at it. I love the fescue. The horse loves the fescue. But, you know, I just take a deep breath and take as many Benadryl as I can without actually knocking myself out and hope for the best. And it didn't work this time.
Yeah, I saw your post on Facebook.
I might have to message you that photograph, but please don't put it on Facebook. Everybody's going to wonder, you know, what the hell happened to you? Did you, you take on the Hell's Angel one night or something? What the hell?
Well, Jeb, that's our farm report for today. For you fellas there in Kentucky. Yeah, I know, man. I hear you. We've got a lot going on in the city besides that. I got to give a shout out to two people, though, real quick. Brooks Hill Winery. If you guys ever get a chance to go to Brooks Hill Winery, trust me, you won't be disappointed. These guys have got a great selection, but my personal favorite, man, is Black and Blue. They've got a personal brand called Black and Blue, and I tell you what, we went up there Saturday night, me and the wife and some friends and a family, and we went up there Saturday night. And, you know, I don't normally like to drink in public. I refuse to do that because so many people identify me, and I'm not going to be that clown that, you know, gets all over to me. Well, he was drinking, and he was at this place, and, you know, they try to lie about everything because I don't believe in drinking and driving. But, you know, I tell you, it was fascinating because they just got the greatest wine in the world. But there's a two-man band there, a two-person band. It's called Whiskey Tango. For you guys, they've got a Facebook page at Whiskey Tango, but check these guys out. It's a two-man band. They're both right around 50 years old, but they're just a couple old boys that have a lot of fun, and they've got one hell of a following. And I tell you what, man, if you guys ever get a chance, check out Whiskey Tango and check out Brooks Hill Winery, because these are great places. But in the meantime, people don't come here for the farm reports. They don't come here to talk about, you know, what we drank on the weekend. They come here for news, Ed. Believe it or not.
When it gets into politics, it's kind of like the farm report, you know, because what goes in the front end of a horse comes out the back end is, you know, political rhetoric.
And politics, of course, drives you to want your wine and drink, so there you go. But we've got all kinds of things going on. On a quick local level, there's a couple of things I want to mention. For one thing, the Louisville mayor last week proposed his budget. It's a $716.2 million budget. You don't think that's that bad. It's pretty standard. But what's really interesting here, and the reason that this became a story for me, rather than just the usual, is because you can go to examiner.com and check out their article on this, because this is where I got this information from. But the budget that he gave to the Metro Council says that it contains no new tax increases. That's right. No new tax increases. But wait a minute. Your illegal taxes, your municipal water and sewer bills were going to go up greatly next year. They're going to increase significantly. We already know we have almost 6% MSD bill going up. And the Louisville Water Company is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the city of Louisville, but they incorporated the damn thing so they don't have to worry about getting approval from anybody for rate increases. So they raise their rates every year, even though they show mass profits every year instead of giving it back to us. So those are going to go up. So your bills are going to go up. Additionally, another couple of things that I found funny in this budget, the city of Louisville gets about $15 million a year, give or take, from the state every year on gas taxes. Okay, they usually only spend about $2.5 million of this for actual road repairs. The rest of it, they spend whichever way they want.
And I might add, it shows.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. Well, the good news is, Ed, it maybe won't show as bad because next fiscal year, Fisher has decided he's going to increase the portion of the highway taxes that they actually do spend on road repairs to about $6.4 million. So everybody says, wow, finally, because we're going to almost triple the taxes we're going to spend on road repairs, right? It sounds great on paper. Well, that's not exactly true. That's not exactly true because he's going to spend an additional $6.4 million and call it road repairs. But most of this increase is going to do nothing but increase and construct new bicycle paths. So they're not going to fix the roads with the gas taxes. They're going to build new bike paths for the 100 people in Louisville that actually ride their bikes around town. I guess Tom Owen will be happy. So that's kind of interesting here as well. And then, of course, they tried to get this, Fisher and Democrat council members, Tina Ward-Pugh, Mary Woolridge, Attica Scott, Brent Axon, Rick Blackwell, Madonna Flood, Tom Owen, of course. They had tried to get this new 20% increase in the city's insurance premium tax so they could get that $10 million. They were going to use that for affordable housing, but they didn't get that tax approved, thank God. And so now that's just going to have to be thrown away. So we're not going to do anything with that. What's really interesting is because we, the people, stood up against that tax increase, and thank you, folks, by the way. And what's really funny is everybody backed off of that went along with it except Tina Ward-Pugh, Attica Scott, and Tom Owen. So remember those three people in your next election because these guys continue working on that. Another story that I glanced at, which was really interesting to me, was the Jefferson County Teachers Association are now going to go into negotiations, for the new contract. So they're going to negotiate the labor contract. Those talks are supposed to start June the 3rd. It's going to involve JCTA and the JCPS. Apparently, it's the first time in 8 years that they've actually met in person to forge a new agreement. I'm interested to see how this is going to work out. And considering all of the schools that are failing, that have not made any significant changes going forward and getting better, the criticism from the state education commissioner, I'm curious to see what Brent McKim thinks he's going to pull this time. Brent McKim is already playing it down, saying they're not looking for any revolutionary changes in the new contract. And he's agreeing now that something has to be done to address the concerns over the lack of improvement at 18 JCPS schools. It's funny, he don't mention those until he has to worry about his contract, isn't it?
Once again, what I hear is we've got a bunch of adults negotiating about what they're going to get while the kids are still getting screwed on their education.
Exactly. So now the union is all of a sudden ready to explore options that they've always traditionally railed against, which is including extending the workday of teachers. But if you're going to extend their workday, we're going to give them extra pay too. I've got some problems with that. I really do. Because if these teachers aren't doing their job, the union won't allow you to hold these teachers accountable. JCPS won't force the issue. Brent McKim has been out there screaming for years that it's not his teachers' fault. It's JCPS. They don't have enough money. Now he has to admit that they do have a problem. So I thought that was an interesting story from that context as well.
I don't have anything against teachers. I have a number of them, actually all retired in my family. But, the fact of the matter is when you're a private sector guy like me or you, you have a product that you have to deliver. I don't want to hear any of this crap. It's like, it's a calling. It's this, You don't know how hard it is. I don't really care how hard it is. Nobody's forcing you to do it. But you have a product to deliver, and you're not delivering the product. So you really, in my book, you don't have any wiggle room. You have no grounds to stand and say you want anything more. It's like my dad always used to say. People always come up to work for him and say, if I get a little more money, I'd be able to get a little more work done. And he'd say, get a little more work done, you get a little more money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I totally agree with that.
If it were up to me and – fortunately for them, it's not, and thankfully my kids aren't in public schools. And, if you deliver the product, you can, hell, if you were to get us up there, I can't pay you enough if we have the best education system in this country. You can punch your own ticket, but I'm sorry, you're failing miserably. To the point that the private school system is thriving in here where you've got people willing to pay 10 grand a year to not have to go to your schools for free. Yeah, you got a problem, and you do not, you have no grounds to ask for more money.
Well, you know, and I totally agree with you there. And we've got additional things here too, because Michigan is on the radar again. Last week or the week before, I can't remember which, I hadn't had time to get to this story yet, but it all ties in together. But Michigan apparently has just won in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. What essentially happened here was four unions that were representing Michigan school employees, they filed a lawsuit to block Public Act 53, which is a law that the Michigan legislature passed, that bans payroll deduction for union dues for public school employees. Detroit U.S. District Judge Denise Page Hood granted a preliminary injunction in June 2012 prohibiting the law from taking effect. So that's what made it go to the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Raymond Kethledge, she was named to the bench in 2008 by President George Bush, said that the law did not violate the U.S. Constitution, rejected union arguments that the failure to collect dues violated the First Amendment right to speech for teachers unions. So what goes on here is, and why the reason this is so telling, is because the Sixth Circuit Appeals Court, the Court of Appeals, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, reviews appeals not just from Michigan, but they also include Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee. That's all the Sixth Circuit. So if Michigan is not, the schools are now, or their school boards are no longer, the JCTA and all the guys can't have their union dues automatically deducted from paychecks, then the union dues become a voluntary situation. Because if you're not forced to have that deducted from your paycheck, then if you don't want to go work for a union, at this point, you just set the stage where they don't have to. And I kind of like that. I like that a lot, because the interesting thing is, you know, according to Freedom Fund President Greg McNeely, 1% of union bosses, you know, have been fleecing taxpayers to take money out of public school classroom to finance their internal dues collection efforts. And the way that I read that to mean is somebody has to collect those dues. Somebody has to take the time to write a separate check to the union for those dues that are collected. All of this comes out of public education funds. Now, it may not be $100,000 or $200,000 a year. I have no idea what it costs Michigan for that. But that money is money that's supposed to be spent on education, not collecting union dues. So this puts a little bit more money back into the till without raising taxes, and I like that a lot. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, in defense of teachers, now that I've taken a swipe at the overall product, you do see a lot of teachers spending their own money to buy supplies because, you know, from the top-down administration, they either don't have enough money or the bureaucracy doesn't get it. So you know what? I also look at that as more to education. It's like now if they don't have that extra line on their paycheck, it's being withheld and given to the union. It might make it a little more comfortable for the teachers that do feel that they have to buy school supplies for the classroom. It makes it a little easier. Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of in agreement with you there. It's almost like a new pay raise. I mean, you know, because if they're not going to have them automatically withdrawn, the union certainly won't want to represent them. So they're going to sit there and continue pushing this idiotic stuff. But the reality is that for any employer, in my opinion, for any employer to take union dues out of your paycheck on a mandatory basis is an insult. That should never be legal. But a private business makes that agreement with the union. Okay, that's private business. I'm not going to get into the rights of private business on that. But when it comes to public employees and a school board, and let me be very clear here, too, because this is something that's interesting to me. You know, one of the only dissent on the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals is Judge Jane Brandstetter Straunch. And, of course, she was named to the bench by Obama. And the first thing that she did was try to turn this into Republican politics. You know, and for the record, Judge, your job is to interpret the laws that sit before you, not blame a Democrat or Republican for it. But she went on to say that, you know, the Republican argument that the bill would boost union accountability, you know, was a farce and everything like that. So she had no business bringing politics into this. Our judges are supposed to be nonpartisan, but this is a Barack Obama appointee, so we expect this. But there was one question raised by Judge Jane Straunch that I actually agree with. In the dissent, she wanted to know why Public Law 53 was not extended to police, firefighters and other public sector unions. And that I agree with. If we're going to do this to the teachers, and these are public unions, then we need to apply this law equally across the board to all public unions. So I'm curious to see if Michigan takes that line and goes ahead and forces this on all public employee unions. And if they do, will Kentucky have the balls to follow suit? That's going to be interesting to me.
Yeah, so I think it'll be interesting. And I think it's for better or worse, it shows up in tough economic times. So, you know, these guys are very possibly going to look at it and say, yeah, we could use the extra whatever, $20 a week that you're taking out of our pay. And I think that the economics of it might scare the unions as much as anything. People could use the extra money.
Well, I agree with you, and I think, you know, and ultimately what this does, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the JCTA is polluted. You know, most of the teachers that I speak with, and believe me, folks, that's a few hundred that I've spoken with about the JCTA, you know, so don't make this claim lightly, but the ones that I've spoken with, I would tell you that the majority of those people can't even stand the JCTA, that they feel that the JCTA is as much of a problem in the classroom as anything they face. They get sick of bad teachers being rewarded. They get sick of the same things that we continue to gripe about. When you're talking about a few hundred people that you talk to that live and breathe in that profession every day, and they agree with that, that tells you an alarming thing, that the JCTA has gotten too powerful from the union perspective, and we need to revamp that. So I'm hoping that this, what happens in Michigan here, is going to trickle down to Kentucky and help us along the same road. We also have a real quick story. May not mean much to a whole lot of people, but we also talk a lot about Walmart. Walmart is one of the biggest non-union corporate welfare guys there are. You know, if you guys remember, there was a documentary done a while back called The Price of Walmart. And one of the things that they spoke about, this has probably been 4 or 5 years ago, one of the things that they pointed out, I mean, let's forget, you know, the people that are living on food stamps, getting Section 8 housing and all this other stuff, that Walmart refuses to pay their people a good wage, which kind of is in controversy with saying, you know, there are some things that need to be unionized. Maybe Walmart's one of them. But let's say this, though. One of the things that they brought to the forefront was how much Walmart was destroying communities, streams, rivers, and things like that, because of the way that they were handling their, you know, their pesticides and hazardous materials. Well, now we have a story coming out. Walmart in California will pay $81.6 million in fines after they pled guilty to criminal charges of improperly disposing of fertilizer, pesticides, and other hazardous products in California and Missouri. They entered their plea in federal court in San Francisco for violating the Clean Water Act and other environmental law, and this is going to settle all the EPA allegations against them. This isn't the first time they've done this. They actually got in trouble back in 2010 for the same thing, paid almost $22 million then. You know, they're stepping up a little bit on Walmart. Does this mean we're finally going to get some accountability with these guys and maybe level out the competition field?
Well, you know, I don't know about the competition aspect of it, but, you know, the facts are pretty damn simple. I mean, Walmart, they should know better. I mean, especially when you're, you know, when you handle pesticides or any kind of things like that, you know, whether you hate Walmart or love them, you know, I love the shop there. I don't think I'd work there, you know.
Right.
If you've got somebody working in a given department and they're handling a certain material, I can tell you in our place of business and pretty much every place of business I've ever been, the person that's handling that material is familiar with it. You know, you've got to have MSDSs on the shelf. You've got to have emergency procedures, you know, whether it's super glue or pesticides. You've got to know, you know, you have an obligation. I'm surprised that, you know, they don't find themselves in trouble with OSHA, too, because – you know, there's got to be training. There should be, at least. And if they fail on that and they're paying the fine, yeah, maybe they'll straighten it out. But that's just a matter of, you know, that's employee safety. That's customer safety. That's a safety issue. And they should definitely have addressed that. You know, Lord, you can't tell me that that if they're handling products from Chevron, like Ortho Wheat Be Gone and stuff, you know, I'm
right.
sure Ortho would be more than happy to supply them with an MSDS and a hazmat sheet on it. Probably has. So it's
well,
like,
they've got one.
You know,
I'm
what?
Sure they've got one in a book, yeah.
Yeah. You know what? While you're paying your employees $8.50 an hour, just have them sit down for an hour and peruse those books a little bit every once in a while. So it's, you know, it's like, hey, don't pour it down a storm drain, idiot.
Well, that's exactly it. These guys do what they want to do. They always have. They've never worried about it. I mean, for some reason, and I have no idea why, but for some reason, Walmart has seemingly been off the hook for any accountability on anything. I mean, you know, their employees are getting paid everything in the world. The government benefits out the wazoo because they refuse to pay them any kind of a decent wage. And I know that that's good for people like, you know, you just said you like to shop there, and that's because of their
yeah.
prices. But at the same time, you know, where they're getting away with not, you know, having to deal with the everyday things everybody else has to deal with OSHA and EPA and all of that stuff, of course they can keep their prices low. You know, can they continue to keep their prices low if they're held to the same exact standard as everybody else? I don't think so. And that's what I think this is going to lead to. I think this is going to put them in a position where they're going to have to compete fairly because, you know, they're no longer, the EPA and everybody else is no longer turning their heads when it comes to Walmart. And, you know,
yeah.
you get a few of these fines, they add up quick. So I think that's very interesting.
Yeah,
we're going
to
take.
And at some point, I think they need to, you know, they need to sheathe their swords. It's like, look, you're the biggest employer, you're the biggest, you know, you're huge. You know, you don't have to be so predatory all the time and keep moving into smaller and smaller communities and squashing the competition. Now, I'll be honest, perfectly honest, one of the reasons to shop at Walmart, not so much price, convenience. I'm telling you, they must have planned their stores on the route I go to work. It's like I can either route I take, I can drive right past one. They're open 24 hours a day, you know, and that's that means something to me. Now, I don't buy, you know, a lot of people say, oh, all I sell is a bunch of made-in-China crap. Like, well,
right.
not quite. You know, I buy a lot of automotive stuff and a lot of food. And it's like, no, it's fair enough. You know, they do what they do. But, yeah, they're convenient. But, yeah, I think at some point it's like, gosh, you know, just, okay, take a deep breath. And, you know, and I know this is sometimes antithetical to the business mind.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like you're huge. Just, you know, calm down a little bit. Don't worry about crushing the competition. Don't worry about constantly pounding prices down. You've got good market saturation. Now, I've spent a little effort, time and effort and money on being a better neighbor, you know, being a better corporate citizen.
Well, and I think that's what you're supposed to be. I mean, you know, if everybody else is going to be required to be a good corporate citizen, well, let's be very clear here. We know that a lot of these places that deal with pesticides, herbicides, or any of the other stuff that affects the environment would not be good corporate citizens if they weren't forced to by law. Everybody's looking to make a quick buck. We know this. But with Walmart, seemingly, they've been able to get away with not having to worry about any of that stuff until now. So I'm hoping that this holds them accountable. Forces them into compliance, forces them to do what everybody else says they're supposed to do, and puts together a level playing field. That's all I'm looking for. We're going to take a quick break, bottom of the hour break. When we get back, we're going to switch gears. Got a little bit more to say about unions and a little bit more to say about, oh, I don't know, Obamacare. You guys are going to love this. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Oh, being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound in.
is always time for the Eagles. Get over it. John Henley, yes, you got it, man. I tell you, the Eagles, it's amazing how well these guys have stayed through all of these years. I mean, it really is. These guys have been around for over 30, 40 years, and I tell you what, I still listen to them every day, and they're still out there trying to make some new music. So I kind of like them. I hope everybody else does too. Ed, you know, last week we had reported about one union that had decided they were going to go public against Obamacare and started talking about everything bad about it, how they were sold a bill of goods, blah, 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 you know, blaming themselves being sold. They had the option to read the paperwork and know what they were getting into as well, but instead they spent millions of dollars backing Obamacare to try to think that they were going to get something for free, and now they found out they wasted their money. Well, it turns out there's a lot more. We have at least four or five now that have gone public against Obamacare. You know, the one that went out last week that we talked about was the United Union of Roofers, Waterproofers, and Allied Workers. You know, they were the ones that did it before. Well, now we've got the United Food and Commercial Workers. The UFCW is now out there. So we've got a lot of people that are starting to stand up against Obamacare. You know, it's pretty interesting because this is just basically, for me, laughable at this point. Because we spent a lot of time over the last few years telling everybody the same stuff that's coming true, did we not?
Oh, yeah. And the sad thing is people, and we did it, and other people did it with jokes, you know, brought to you by the same people that brought you the U.S. Postal Service, you know, and Obamacare, it'll be run as well as the Iraq War, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the government. But, of course, the most telling statement of the whole Obamacare fiasco, you know, if in fact it turns out to be a fiasco, it always, you know, if we're stuck with it, I certainly hope they can make the best of it. But when Nancy Pelosi said, we'll have to pass it to see what's in it. And that, if that wasn't an oh, my God moment for you, then, you know, you need to get back under the rock you were in. It's like, oh, my God, we need to pass it to see what's in it.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right.
This is going to hurt.
Of course. It's amazing because the only thing Obamacare really does is increase regulations. It forces insurance companies to ignore price signals. You know, of course, everything from an economics 101 standpoint, and I've studied economics, folks, and so has Ed, you know, tells you that Obamacare is going to lead to shortages in services and prices going up. I mean, that's a supply and demand situation, folks. And this is critical. But what's amazing is the unions have spent millions of dollars backing these liberal nut jobs who said Obamacare was going to be great. You know, and it turns out it's not. I mean, Obamacare kicked in. Now, you know, in our particular situation, my wife works at Ford. So, you know, she's in a union, the UAW, and the UAW has a VBA. The UAW actually took over the health care benefits of Ford. So Ford was laughing all the way to the bank, and the UAW ain't got a clue what they're doing. But, you know, so our rates have went up drastically and stuff like this. We pay a lot more money than we did just a couple of years ago. But, you know, we look at all of this in play. Obamacare was supposed to fix everything. It was supposed to be this universal health care coverage. The unions were going to save money. The employers were going to save money. Instead, Obamacare is adding trillions to the deficit. You know, according to the 17 biggest health insurance companies, they put out a study that says their insurance prices are going to go up between 100% and 400%. You know, the people don't support it. So what gives? Why is this damn thing not being overturned? 2/3 of the people don't even support Obamacare anymore.
Well, I think it's kind of like we're stuck in quicksand. The more you struggle, I mean, the longer you stay there, people are going to get wore out. And I think our own Congress critter, John Yarmuth, once summed it up pretty well. He's like, look, if you take away Obamacare, you know, and he said, to paraphrase it, you're going to have to stand up there and take away some stuff from, you're taking something away from some voters, you know, because it is going to be good for some people, you know. But I think the problem we're running into here, and I hate to break society into two parts, but look, if you work at Ford, if you work at the UFCW, If you work for the roofers, God, that sounds like a tough job. I mean, they really do sound like that. Whew, I bet that's tough work, and no pun intended. You ain't getting me up on a roof. But you know, you're probably fairly fit. You're probably fairly healthy, fairly reliable. So you aren't the person that was going to get some stuff taken away from you. But it sounded good at the time, and it didn't, you know, and it's like, yeah, we all want to take care of everybody, but it just gets back to basic economics. It's, you know, the thing that worried me most about Obamacare was accessibility. You know, I could actually sit back and think, you know, the Danes and other countries, yeah, it worked out pretty good with single-payer health care. It works out all right. But the thing that killed me is, like, for a while, one of my daughters had this stomach issues. And it was like, you know, how many gastrointestinal specialists, you know, juvenile specialists are in the city of Louisville? One.
It's totally fascinating to me.
You know,
for them,
and I'm
you
thinking,
mentioned.
Okay, so we had to wait 3 months. You know, is popping the Prilosec and stuff, trying to keep this kid from barfing all the time. And,
right.
Or whatever it was, the lactate and all that other stuff. And we had to wait 3 months. And then I'm listening to these people talk about Obamacare, and it just as recently, this year, saying, well, there's 300,000 more people we're going to put on Medicaid. Thinking, great. Sounds to me like 3 months just turned into 6 months because y'all didn't do a damn thing to straighten out, you know, the actual supply and demand issues that were involved with health care, accessibility, and prices. So,
well,
yeah, I mean, I just see if they just decide, and I actually posted that from the debate when I was in the congressional debate, said you aren't addressing supply and demand that drives accessibility and prices.
Oh, I know.
Nobody
I remember that.
Nobody had an answer for it. So I'm having a blast with that, by the way. I found that back on KET, and I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I did say that, didn't I?
Oh, yeah. I remember all that well. John Yarmuth and them, of course, did the same thing they always do. You know, double-talked out of his mouth because he didn't have a clue either. And you mentioned, you know, Nancy Pelosi, you know, is the one who stated that we have to pass the bill so that we can find out what's in it. You know, well, she, you know, she's still out there touting that Obamacare is actually saving us trillions of dollars. Yet, interestingly enough, she's about the only Democrat I can find other than John Yarmuth who's actually stupid enough to give us that logic. Even Senator Max Baucus, he's a Democrat out of Montana. He was also one of the chief architects of Obamacare bill. I mean, he's even now on record as saying that the law's implementation was headed for a train wreck. And here's what we're looking at. We're looking at, for anybody getting a new plan, you're essentially looking at 100% additional costs. Your plan just doubled if you want a new plan. For anybody who's keeping their existing insurance, you know, you would think that that's going to save you a little bit of money. Not so much. You're going up 73%, you know, and based on your age and the mandates within Obamacare, you know, a lot of people are going to go up 413%, you know. And, of course, where does this fall to? I mean, even Chuck Schumer, he's the ultimate liberal Democrat, you know. He's saying that the costs are going to go through the roof because of Obamacare, and he's not happy with it either. So you've got two of the leading Democrats. One of them helped architect the whole plan, saying that they screwed up, you know, and yet nobody's doing anything about it. Even Obama went out there and said that, you know, when he did all this, he was insisting that this wasn't going to be paid for on the backs of the middle-class families. Guess what? It is.
Yeah.
It's a new tax, essentially. So, you know, and then, of course, you get into the secondary equation. Look at the secondary possibilities here. How many companies have announced that they're cutting back full-time employees so that they don't have to pay yet? You know, one survey out there is showing that 31%, up to 31% of franchise owners are going to reduce their workforce, you know, and they're going to take 3.2 million full-time employees that are going to be left without insurance. They're not paying for it anymore. Lower paychecks, when you get your hours cut from 40 hours a week to 29 hours a week, you're not going to have the paycheck, are you? So we've got all of these different things. Of course, you've got the bureaucrats who ain't got a clue of running this damn thing. You know, it's crazy. You know, and then, of course, you know, half of Obamacare isn't going to make any kind of a difference whatsoever in the outcome of anybody that has any kind of critical care. So we've got all of these different things going on, and you guys can go to policymike.com, that's PolicyMic.com, and you can check out these studies for yourself because it's very, very interesting. And, you know, I started asking myself, though, and I had to ask the obvious question, why? Why would Obamacare force these prices up so much? What could be so possibly, where's the red herring in this? I mean, other than the bureaucracy and everything else, what in the world would cost this? Well, Rand Paul answered my question. He answered that question for me this morning. Rand Paul was speaking today about Obamacare, and he pointed out some things that most people don't know and don't pay attention to, including me. Currently today, there's about 18,000 diagnostic codes that doctors typically use for insurance purposes. So if you go in, they look at a code based on one of 18,000 different codes that they bill to your insurance company that they get paid and reimbursed for it. Obamacare is going to require doctors to use roughly 122,000, you heard me right, 122,000 new medical diagnostic codes to satisfy the federal government. Now, this sounds like a hell of a lot, and it is a hell of a lot, but what's fascinating isn't just the fact that they're going to add 122,000 codes and take this from 18,000 to 140,000 diagnostic codes to satisfy the federal government. This is stuff that this is how they explain it. These new codes, according to Senator Paul, include classifications for, guess what, injuries sustained from a turtle, injuries sustained walking into a lamp.
I've been bitten by a turtle before, all right? Back off,
okay.
Champ.
Okay, all right, but check
okay,
this out.
But granted, I was about 7 years old. 7 years old, messing with a turtle. I deserved it.
You know what, though? So let's give you one code. They actually have two different codes for turtles. One is whether you've been bit by a turtle. The other one is whether you've been struck by a turtle. Now, I don't know about you, but I can't think of too many people who can't outrun a turtle. Okay? So you've got these two things. You've got a code for walking into a lamppost. Then they've got a second code for walking into a lamppost due to subsequent encounter. There's 72 new codes for injuries that come from birds. 9 new codes for injuries from the macaw. Now, you know, Rand Paul goes on to say that, you know, he's asked physicians all in the country, how many have ever seen an injury from a macaw? And there's not been one. So this is what the federal government is doing. Now, of course, you're going to have to hire people to oversee all this crap. You're going to have to put all this out.
Yeah.
You wonder why Obamacare costs so much. This is a great example of it, of overreaching government. They literally want to know everything about your life. Guys, go to theblaze.com to check that out. But it's totally, totally fascinating. Ed, have you ever heard of such garbage?
Well, you know, it's not only that, but the thing that, you know, two other things that they didn't plan on with Obamacare is one that I said years before it went into implementation is called concierge service. It's where you basically, doctors aren't going to take Medicare or Medicaid anymore. You'll either have private insurance, and I actually have a family member who's done this, and you basically pay a doctor a set fee at the beginning of the year. Part of your contract is, you know, you kind of give up a lot of your right to sue. So, you know, he lowers his cost. And you basically, it's like being in a country club. You know, your country club is this doctor's office. He's only seeing so many patients. So I already know of a couple of doctors who have closed their shop. And they're saying, you know, it's going to cost you $1,000, in one case, $5,000 a year to get my services, but you got my services, you know, and it's a one-time fee. So you got that happening. And then another phenomenon, and I've joked about it before, but, you know, the average employee, now if you have a halfway decent health insurance policy, your company's spending $4,000 or $5,000, if not $6,000 or $7,000 a year on their employees for commercial health insurance. I've often made the joke, and I won't do it because I like my employees, but mathematically, I could look at it and say, we're canceling insurance. Each one of you gets a $2,200 bonus check. Go enlist in Obamacare. And I'd be thinking, I'm going to save so damn much money, and I think that's going to be the next wave of what you see. I think you're going to see a lot of companies that have pretty good private health insurance plans that, you know, they really do care for their employees, but it's just going to become so cumbersome and so much of a bureaucracy and just, you know, waiting for mud. They're going to say, screw it. They say, look, you know, I'm spending this money. I'm trying to give you health care, but I just can't do it anymore. I don't have this, you know, I'm going to have to hire two people to muddle through this crap. And they're just going to look at the employees and say, it's my understanding that, if I don't provide health insurance, if I have under 50 employees, I don't get fined. And I think you're going to see companies limiting their payroll. on number, and I'm assuming you're going to see a lot of companies beginning just to turn them over and say, you know what, I'm paying $7,000, I'm going to give you $3,000 of it, and you can go buy your Medicaid. I'm sorry, your health insurance is going to suck, and your doctors, some of your doctors are going to tell you they don't take it anymore, but I'm out of options. I'm at the end of my rope. I don't have the personnel to do it.
Well, and that's interesting you bring all that up, too, because that leads me to another story. You know, the concierge service is one that has become more and more prominent in the last 4 or 5 years, and has more than doubled since the advent of Obamacare. But what's really more interesting too, when we look at this, we've got a story coming out of South Portland, Maine. Dr. Michael Ciampi, he decided he was going to stop taking all forms of health insurance. He just decided this. Went into effect on April the 1st. He sent a letter to his patients telling them he wasn't going to accept any kind of health coverage, private or government-sponsored, period. He was asking for them to pay for services out of their pocket, and he took the additional step of posting his prices online. So it's really interesting, and one of the things that's happened here is, because before he did this, he was charging $160 for an office visit, now he charges $75. Now, see, that's another red flag there. One of the things I've pointed out on the show many times is the way your health insurance providers work. If your doctor has a $100 normal office fee, if you will, that's what they start to negotiate from with an insurance company. The insurance company will knock them down to $40 or $50. Most people have a $35 copay. In my case, that's what we do. So my doctor normally charges $85 for an office visit. The negotiated price he has with our insurer is $40. I pay $35 copay. My insurer is getting $600 to $700 a month from an employer to pay for this insurance, and I go to the doctor once a year. So they're paying $5 once a year. They're raking in $2,000 or better a year from an employer. So when we look at this in play, you know, Ciampi is able to take this down from $160 to $75 because that's his real cost. In addition, since he's not taking any more insurance at all, he just saved himself 2 or 3 full-time staff members having to deal with all these insurance companies, filling out paperwork for all these people and everything else. And, you know, one of the things that he does say is that he had about 2,000 patients. Now, think about that, 2,000 patients. That's a lot of people. He said he did lose a few hundred initially. Because they didn't feel like filling out the paperwork themselves with their insurers to get reimbursed. And a lot of people don't understand you can do that. The doctors don't have to bill for you. It's just a service that they offer, and, you know, they have to have people to do it for them. So since insurance companies no longer tell him how much he can charge, then he's also able to come off of that $75. If he has somebody who's struggling with medical bills, he could charge them cheaper than $75. It's his choice. He could go out and make house calls now that he didn't have time to do before. This is very interesting to me. I like the direction this guy is going. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I especially like the published prices. But, you know, I think it's, sometimes I look at it and I think you got the insurance companies, you got the government, you got all these people who oftentimes aren't that damn smart. And they're telling the smartest people in the country, which is often doctors, you know, this is how you have to do it. This is what you get charged. And I think this is great. I mean, okay, look, the doctor made it through med school. I think between him and his accountant, they can figure out what to charge and how to bill it. And the patients, you know, hey, I think as we've spoken before with from Buckmeister to Rand Paul when he was on our show. There's a connection there, too, because we've always talked about that disconnect that people have with their health care. You know, they go in, they plink down a card, they plink down $25 or $40 or whatever your copay is, and then they don't give a rat's ass. Somebody else is picking it up.
I totally agree with you.
Like the 20% of it, and go, oh, my God, how'd that happen? Well, it happened because you kept nodding your head yes as you think somebody else had the cab. So, you know, I think it builds in all sorts of good old-fashioned free market type information exchange. It's, you know, doctor saying, this is what I got to have, and you can look at him and say, no, it doesn't hurt that bad, you know?
Right. Well, it's fascinating, too, because, you know, there are some critics to this. Gordon Smith, he speaks for the Maine Medical Association. You guys can go to the Bangor Daily News for this article, and I'll tell you a lot about it too. But Gordon Smith, he's a spokesman for the Maine Medical Association. You know, he doesn't seem to think this is a great idea because he's of the mind that most patients want to use the insurance they pay for, or they want to use Medicare or Medicaid if they rely on them. The problem is,
well,
that this is what most
–
well,
he
is a dumbass.
I'm just going to say it right now. He's a dumbass. I want to know what I'm paying for. Like I just said, that's a problem. I'm guilty of it. You're guilty of it. Point down an insurance card and 220s, and you don't give a rat's ass, it gets expensive from there.
Well, if you're lucky enough to have a physician that you've been with for years and years and years, you know, your daily things are pretty easy. You know, for me, I take medication every day, and I'll take it for the rest of my life. Okay, I know that. We've talked about that on air before. My doctor knows me. So once every 6 months, I guess I go twice a year, but once every 6 months, I'm required to come in for lab work and get prescriptions renewed. But if I have the occasional, you know, sore throat or something else, and he's familiar with my history with strep and tonsillitis and things like that, you know, so he's familiar with my history. If you're fortunate enough and have a good doctor, they'll call in a prescription for you. My doctor's charged now for that. They didn't used to charge anything, but now they charge $10 to make a phone call in a prescription for you. And that's okay. That's fine. You know, but if you're spending money on Medicare Part D supplement for those people who are complaining because it affects their Medicare and Medicaid, you know, to pay $10 a month, just because most of the time you're going to the doctor is because you just need your prescriptions renewed, so now it's only going to cost you $10 a month. That's $120 a year. That's a hell of a lot cheaper than a Medicare Part D that they're paying for. And, you know, when we look at this and play to it, I mean, we have to look at the big picture here. You know, I mean, Shampi even goes on to talk about, you know, now that he deals with nothing but patients, he don't have to worry about people coming in his office that are just talking to nurse practitioners and things like that, or physician's assistants. A lot of people don't like that, and they don't trust that. You know, now they get to see him. If they have something simple, you know, like a sore throat or an earache, you know, a lot of these people that they're complaining about would typically go to an emergency room, pay $500 and up just because of a simple earache. You know, they can go to his office for $50. You see what I'm saying? So there's all kinds of ways to save money here. And, you know, I like this guy's approach.
If
my doctor would do that,
that'd
be great.
And a very important part, and like I say, Rand Paul and Buckmeister both said it, is we get a more educated consumer. I mean, you know, when I blew up mowing hay the other day, and like I had my options of what to do. What to get it. So where do you want to go? You want to go to an immediate care center? You want to go to an emergency room? Or do you want to go to the little Baptist nurse practitioner thing in Walmart? And I said, I'm going to Walmart. It's just a histamine reaction. You know what? Hello.
Exactly. And how much money did you save?
Because I knew one was going to cost me $20, and I knew the other was going to cost me $120. Like,
Not to mention how much your insurance will save because you didn't go to the emergency room. You know, and that's the thing. We've got to take some responsibility over our own medical needs. And think about this, too. For most employers who are paying for benefits for their employees now, those costs are $600 and up every month per employee. Now, if my doctor could do what Ciampi is doing, right now, he would be willing to take cash. He'd be willing to do whatever he has to do and be able to drop his prices like that because he doesn't have all that overhead. You know, you're talking about an employer who could offer each employee an extra $500 a month lump sum in their paycheck, all right? Because most of those employees, I mean, you get young guys stuff, they never go to the doctor. So they can offer them $500 a month extra in their paycheck. Well, there you go. And they're still saving money. The employer's saving money. The employee is getting more money, you know, and you've got to save for that. Now, if you want to go out and get a catastrophic plan, so if you ever get hospitalized, you can pick those up for a couple $100, and you're still making more money. So, you know, this is the whole thing for me. I just don't get it. I like this deal with Ciampi, and I like the direction that is going. So we'll see where we leave from there. Ed, you know what? The hour goes by quick when we're having fun, my friend. It's time to wrap up. Final thoughts.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, final thoughts. Since we're on health care, I'll just go right at Miss Nancy and everybody else. It's like, you know, I'll be honest. I have looked at and thought about it and looked at other foreign models. And things like Obamacare, they can work. But as me being the cynic, you know, single payer can work. I know it's a So my conservative friends hate to see that, hate to hear me say that. But it does work in other countries, and it's not a train wreck. And, you know, the private sector is not a train wreck with us either. They both need work. But the problem is we have a government that's bought and paid for by special interests and corporations. We've got a federal government and state government. And let's face it, these clowns can't balance checkbooks. They can't write laws that they can live by. We're going to trust them to essentially one-seventh of the U.S. economy. To rewrite it all in one grand bill. And they're all rich kids. They're all rich kids, and there's damn few physicians, and there's probably damn fewer accountants sitting up, you know, in
right.
Washington and Frankfurt if you're in Kentucky. You know, what the hell were we thinking when we trusted these people to do it in the first place? You know, we weren't cynical enough. We didn't say, go in and fix, you know, see if you can fix this part before you go in and, you know, fix a little bit of it. Show us that you can actually, you know, keep all four wheels on the road before we hand you the wheel permanently. It's like, okay, but we didn't do that. We screwed up. So what do we do now? We throw the bums out, put some people in that can either scrap it or that can make it work, that have sat out on the outside and figured out how, you know, how it can be better, because it's starting to sound like a train wreck.
Well, and it really is a train wreck, Ed. That's the whole problem. Obamacare was destined to be a train wreck from the inception of it. And even those like Democrat Max Baucus in the Senate, who was one of the architects of Obamacare, realizes that now. When you have Democrat Charles Schumer jumping on that bandwagon saying this is wrong, we realize that now. Now we have all the unions coming out of the woodwork who spent millions of dollars forcing this president to enact Obamacare. And believe me, they didn't have to twist his arm, but they spent millions of dollars selling this to the American people. Now they're realizing that they got shafted on that. You know, there are a lot of disturbing trends here. And what it all boils down to is there's not one person in Congress who's not educated. You know, most of those guys have degrees, lawyers, economists, all of these guys. And they just went with the program and nodded their head yes every time they were told to, like a puppet. And that is the problem. Nobody looks out for we the people. Well, now we've got people that are fighting back. Dr. Mike Ciambi in South Portland, Maine. He's fighting back, and I think that that's a great way. He's going back to a true barter system for his healthcare services. You know, and I think if we would get to that point, you know, the problem with a shortage of doctors may be answered. A lot of people decide not to go into the medical field anymore because they can't make money in it. The doctors that accept Medicare and Medicaid at a price that's less than what it costs them to provide the service. So for every Medicaid patient, you know, so for every Medicaid patient they take, they have to lose money on. They're going to overbill somebody's insurance policy somewhere to make it up because they have to survive. And that's your basic problem with insurers and your basic problem with health care. We don't allow these doctors who provide the service every day to do a true cost-benefit analysis and charge us for, you know, providing that, you know, they're trained. You know, they know what they're doing. You know, we've got all kinds of ways to put a check and balance on that. But the bottom line is these guys don't want the education anymore. And why not? We have a third of college grads today that say they regret going to college. They say they can't get jobs in their career field, or the jobs that they can get in their career field doesn't even pay enough to pay off their student loans. So why would you want to go be a doctor? You know, and of course we know from the high school and the public education system, they're just pushing these kids through school like rainwater. All they care about is a standardized test. So it's just going to get worse. The decision makers today aren't even the worst of what we're going to get tomorrow. So we have to start finding a way to take that. Yeah, so we have to find a way to start taking that back, and we're doing it. We're doing it right here in Louisville, Kentucky, anyway, and across the U.S. And we want to thank our listeners out in Colorado and New York. And Washington, D.C., actually, for you guys in Congress who are listening right now, because I see your IP address, we appreciate you listening, too. Maybe you'll get in touch with the people instead of doing what Barack Obama tells you to do. One can only hope. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, don't forget to join us. Dale, the Truth will be here as usual on Wednesday. We will have the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show on Thursday night, and Ken Mulman with Liberty Unbridled Sunday at 7. And one quick apology to our faithful listeners. I had uploaded a show last night. We did not do a live show last night due to the holiday. I had uploaded a show last night that was supposed to play You guys should have heard a repeat of a show that we did previously on education, because I knew that's what I was going to get into tonight. And that show did not play for some reason. So for you guys who didn't get a chance to hear the replay, I apologize. We still don't know what caused the technical glitch, but we are working on it. That's it for tonight. We'll see you tomorrow night. Mr. Martin, thank you so much. For the rest of you guys,
all right,
take care and have a great night.
Have a good one.
We'll see you.
Bye.